Welcome to the Birds of Alberta podcast. I'm Chris Fisher, co-author of the best-selling field guide, Birds of Alberta. Now, there's a species of bird that has put Alberta on the world stage. No matter where you go, where you travel, talk to a birder, a naturalist, or a conservation scientist about your home province, and they will know of one great story involving Alberta parks, Alberta scientists, and Alberta birds. But here's the ironic thing. Even though very few of us have ever seen one in the province, it may very well be the most iconic of the birds of Alberta. It is the whooping crane. Well, let's get into the meat of the story. We won't talk much about what a whooping crane looks like. It is a spectacular looking bird. The story itself, of course, is of recovery and hope. They simply were never a very, very common bird. Even in pre-colonial times, there was only a few thousand of them throughout North America. Very much unlike the other crane that is found on this continent, the sandhill crane, which can number in the hundreds of thousands. Really, whooping cranes are a species from a different era, more suited to a time of mastodons and saber-toothed cats than skyscrapers and highways. Really, the lowest point in the history of these birds falls to 1942. That winter, there was a survey conducted throughout North America, and there were only 22 total whooping cranes found on overwintering sites. 16 were located on the Gulf Coast of Texas, not far from Corpus Christi, in an area known as the Aransas National Wildlife Refuge. There were 16 birds there, and there were only 6 in a non-migratory population located in Louisiana. Now, sadly, that Louisiana population was wiped out in 1950 when there was a hurricane that struck the area. And quite frankly, hurricanes were a threat at that time and continue to be a threat for overwintering populations of whooping cranes along the Gulf Coast of Texas, as it could wipe out the entirety of the global population. The other concern along that region of Texas is it is located along a major transportation corridor for oil shipping, and the demise of those overwintering populations are simply an oil spill away. So following the loss of that Louisiana population, the whooping cranes were really reduced to a single vulnerable population numbering about 20 birds. You know, this species could very well have joined a sad mythical list of endangered North American birds like the passenger pigeon, ivory-billed woodpecker, Bakken's warbler, Carolina parakeet, all of which that went extinct in the first half of the 20th century. Now, in order for that fate not to fall onto the whooping cranes, major conservation efforts were needed in the 1950s to protect not only their wintering grounds, but also where they nested. Now, the problem was, in the 1950s, no one exactly knew where whooping cranes spent their summer. The summer of 1954 in northern Alberta was quite a bad one for forest fires, and that's what led to helicopter pilot Don Landelus and forester George Wilson to be flying around on a sortie scouting out forest fires in Wood Buffalo National Park in the extreme northeast corner of Alberta. During their flight, they thought they saw some large white birds and thought they could possibly be whooping cranes. Now, much credit must be given to Wilson, the forester, because like many foresters, he had a great ability to see forests not only for the value of trees, but also for watersheds and wildlife and many other factors. So the helicopter radioed back to their home base in Fort Smith and asked that they touch base with a young government biologist who was residing there by the name of William Fuller. And so at 5 p.m. on a smoky airstrip in Fort Smith, Alberta, Fuller along with the helicopter pilot, flew over to the area where they thought they spotted the birds. And William Fuller was able to confirm what Landless and Wilson observed just moments earlier, that in fact, they were whooping cranes. And over the course of the summer and into the next year, William Fuller continued to do flyovers of Wood Buffalo National Park, and he would be the first to confirm that, yes, indeed, about six pairs of whooping crane were nesting in that area of Alberta in Wood Buffalo National Park. It is very appropriate and very fortunate that the birds, in fact, were nesting in a national park. Of course, Wood Buffalo National Park was not established for the protection of whooping cranes. It was established, as its name implies, for the protection of wood bison about 30 years previously. But such is the importance of conservation protected areas. You just never know when they'll come in handy. So protection benefits not only target species, but non-target species as well. Now, as the years wore on, William Fuller continued to work with the whooping cranes in Wood Buffalo National Park up until about 1959, when he left Fort Smith to take a position at the University of Alberta, where he played a prominent role in the zoology department. With Fuller leaving, the task of studying the whooping cranes in Wood Buffalo National Park fell to a tall man who was born in Holland, the legendary Ernie Kite. Now, Ernie Kite worked with the Canadian Wildlife Service based out of Edmonton and did legendary work, and his name will forever be associated with the recovery of whooping cranes. Because by 1966, a plan was devised, not only with the Canadian Wildlife Service, but the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, to begin a captive breeding program and a fostering program for whooping cranes. And what was needed were eggs to start these populations. Now, the only way to get whooping crane eggs was to fly up to their breeding grounds in Wood Buffalo National Park. Kite, studying these birds for many years, realized that while they typically lay two eggs, only typically one chick hatches, does well, and eventually joins the adult on their migration south. So what that meant to Kite and the conservation team was there was, in fact, a surplus egg to get. So legendary Ernie Kite developed a strategy to collect these surplus eggs by flying out in the summertime to these extremely remote nests using a helicopter fitted with pontoons for these birds' nests in large swampy wetlands. Kite would get out of the helicopter, sink up to his waist, and slog over to the nests and collect one of the two eggs and secure it in his classic woolen sock. Take it back to the helicopter where it would be safely deposited into a specially manufactured box, which would be shortly flown over to the research facilities in Maryland or Wisconsin. Part of the strategy of securing those eggs was a two-part approach to establish a captive breeding population at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife facilities in the United States, but also to foster whooping cranes under the nests of their close relative, the sandhill cranes. So that was done. In the 1970s, these whooping crane eggs that were close to hatch would be flown down to a local population breeding in Idaho and swapped out for a sandhill crane egg. The idea was that sandhills would raise the whooping cranes of their own, and the young whooping cranes would join the sandhills on their migration down south to New Mexico, where it's thought that a second migratory population would be established, and that would counterbalance the threats, if any should happen, to the Texas migratory population. Well, sadly, this really didn't work out all that well, for the whooping cranes never did really recognize each other and never formed pair bonds or bred with one another. They just felt that they were a crazy looking sandhill crane instead, and that program was stalled and eventually canceled after a few years. Fortunately, the result of the captive-raised whooping cranes was much better, such that by the 1980s and 1990s, there was a sizable captive population that were now breeding and producing their own eggs as well. These birds, all with their roots tracing back to Wood Buffalo National Park, were first used to establish a non-migratory population in Florida, near Kissimmee, Florida. And then eventually the plan was that they would try to establish an eastern migratory population. But this time, they were not going to rely on the instincts of a sandhill crane. They were going to rely on the creativity of a different bird altogether, a Canadian icon, an artist by the name of Bill Leishman. Now, Bill Leishman was the artist featured in the Hollywood film Fly Away Home, and many people may know him for his art, but probably more famously for leading a group of Canada geese south with an ultralight aircraft. The zany thinking could only come from someone outside of conservation circles, but it worked for Canada geese. Ultimately, it worked for sandhill cranes, and once that was proven, it was thought that it would work for whooping cranes. Bill Leishman's vision of using ultralight aircraft to save endangered species was put into place about 20 years ago, and we now have a self-sustaining eastern migratory population that spends the summer breeding in Wisconsin and overwintering in Florida. And the first couple of years, they made that flight in the company of guiding ultralight aircraft. So thanks to really an unparalleled conservation effort jointly by the Canadian Wildlife Service and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and countless other organizations, including the Wilder Institute now at the Calgary Zoo that has their own captive populations that are contributing eggs to this program, North America has the largest whooping crane population that anyone can remember. There are hundreds in the eastern migratory population. There are many, many down in Florida in the non-migratory population. And Louisiana now has a reestablished population numbering close to 100 as well. And what of the classic Alberta to Texas population? It numbers somewhere around 500, and it is doing record business. Each year, there are about 100 nests in and around Wood Buffalo National Park, producing about 100 young of the year that make their flight south, all the way from Wood Buffalo to Texas. And while all these birds are Albertan by birthright, most actually do not stop on in migration in Alberta, certainly in the populous areas of the province. However, every year we do get sightings throughout the province from Grand Prairie all the way down to Coutts with a pair of birds or a small family of whooping cranes stopping by, typically a large wetland, often adjacent to an agricultural area, as they feed on their way south. And that would be a pretty good descriptor of Whitford Lake. That's the location I went out decades ago and drove several hours to stand among the cattails along the shoreline, scanning through the heat waves to see the tall, obscured, and hazy form of my very first Alberta whooping crane. So while it's possible to see some whooping cranes flying through the Alberta skyways on their way south, most of the 500 or so birds that nest up in Wood Buffalo National Park take a really direct path directly south to the Gulf Coast through our neighbor to the east, Saskatchewan. And for the past 3 years, I've co-led a whooping crane tour to central Saskatchewan, northwest of Saskatoon, early each October. Now, this particular area has become quite the hotspot with birders, not only from Alberta, but they're joined by others from around the world. For a brief time in the fall, the fields around Marsland, Saskatchewan. This is where the whooping crane stage by the dozens, as it's really the first good patch of open country with agricultural areas and wetlands that they meet after flying a direct line south over the continuous forests from Wood Buffalo National Park. Now, this area of Saskatchewan is remarkably good to see our Alberta birds. I remember seeing in a single field 17 whooping cranes. Remember, now that is more than there were in the entire known universe in 1942. Of course, when you're fortunate enough to have an experience like that, it's not difficult to be introspective for the birds and the great conservation efforts made here in Alberta for situations like that that came to be. Today's recovery of the whooping crane really represents one of the good news stories and hopeful stories of wildlife conservation, not only in Canada, but throughout the world. And when I look back on the Birds of Alberta Field Guide that we wrote 25 years ago, it pleases me that the whooping crane profile is so out of date. And the root of that positive story. And don't we get into birds to feel good about life, to feel positive about life and find enjoyment? Well, that root of that positive story really hails back to those few men flying over Wood Buffalo Park in 1954. They had their eyes and their minds open. And their actions and those of hundreds of others have led to the long-fought recovery of one of the most famous, albeit seldom seen, birds of Alberta, our whooping crane.